This episode of Search Engine is brought to you in part by Vanguard. To all the financial advisors listening, let's talk bonds for a minute. Capturing value in fixed income is not easy. Bond markets are massive, murky, and let's be real, lots of firms throw a couple flashy funds your way and call it a day. But not Vanguard. Vanguard bonds are institutional quality, meaning top-grade products across a massive lineup of over 80 bond funds. These are actively managed by a 200-person global squad of sector specialists, analysts, and traders. While other firms highlight a single-star portfolio manager, Vanguard shares their best active strategies across the entire team, so every client benefits from their collective brain power. Instead of chasing big returns with big risks, Vanguard focuses on reliability and consistency, setting the standard for dependable investing. So if you're looking to give your clients consistent results year in and year out, go see the record for yourself at vanguard.com/audio. That's vanguard.com/audio. All investing is subject to risk. Vanguard Marketing Corporation Distributor. This episode of Search Engine is brought to you in part by Zapier. We cover a lot of trends on this show, and over the last few months, everyone has been talking about AI. But let's face it, talking about trends doesn't help you be more efficient at work. For that, you need the right tools. You need Zapier. Zapier is how you break the hype cycle and put AI to work across your company for real. Zapier is truly for everyone, tech expert or not, and teams use it to automate everything from marketing to IT. It's how you actually deliver on your AI strategy with an AI orchestration platform that brings power to any workflow, so you can do more of what matters. You can connect top AI models like ChatGPT and Claude to the tools your team already uses, allowing you to build AI-powered workflows or autonomous agents exactly where you need them. Teams have already automated over 300 million AI tasks using Zapier. Join the millions of businesses transforming how they work with Zapier and AI. Get started for free by visiting zapier.com/search. That's zapier.com/search. This is Search Engine. I'm PJ Vogt. No question too big, no question too small. This week, a question that is very small, not a question of mine, someone else's, but a question I related to very deeply. A question from an internet personality, an anonymous one, who writes a Substack I enjoy. I know you prefer to write online under the name Cartoons Hate Her. Is there like a first name that we can use for the purposes of this story?
Yes. So I go by CHH in like my comment section, my Discord and stuff. But then if Legacy Media wants me to write for them, and, you know, sometimes they do, to quote Trump, they were begging like dogs. They were saying, please write for a wonderful publication. But I said, you can't do it without the beautiful pseudonym. I don't want to do the real name. There's a lot of weird people out there, and you got to use the beautiful pseudonym. So basically, I go by Claire Haber-Harris, which is CHH for short.
This was minute two of my interview with Claire. Talking to her, for me, I experienced her like a fireworks factory that someone had accidentally dropped a lit match in. A stunning show, that's also a lot, where I found myself entertained but not totally sure where to sit. So how do you describe what it is you do?
I run the number one humor account on Substack, at least as of this day. I don't know if someone's going to overtake me by the time this comes out. I write about social dynamics, anything from friendship, parenting, relationships, dating, marriage, and then also just some like random like internet pop culture, that kind of stuff. I'll cover a little fashion here and there. I wrote an article about incel gorillas who start their own all-male society. So you never know what you're going to get with my stuff.
You really don't. And recently, Claire wrote about this question she had that captivated me, a blog post called A Full Investigation of Why Nobody Comes to My Parties. The question was simple. In the real world, Claire lives, by her description, an incredibly normie life as a mom somewhere, two kids, a husband, but with this funny problem. She wants to throw these big parties, nothing debaucherous, just a classy party with dressed-up adults and their children. Except when she tries to do it, people don't want to come. A different person would just throw smaller parties or no parties. Claire is not that kind of person. Like, why is throwing parties important to you? Why do you want to throw parties? Why do you want people to come to those parties?
I think it has so much to do with memories I have as a kid. You know, my parents would throw this really big Christmas party every year, and it was dressy. It was formal. People would come in fancy clothes. They would bring their kids. The kids would be dressed fancy. The kids would, like, make little innocent mischief around the house, and there would be all this food. And it was, like, the highlight of my year. My parties are much more low-key, but I do like the idea of, like, people reasonably putting in the effort to dress up a little bit and go to a party. I will put in the effort. I cook for my parties. I go to so much effort. I make cakes. I make roast duck. I want to do the work. And I love doing the work. I love doing that. All I ask is that people come and that they wear something better than sweatpants.
And so what has happened so far? Like, you have this vision in your head, which is like a party where you cook something, where people dress like above airport grade clothing.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe there's a theme. What happens when you try to do this?
Every single time it was the same thing, where I'd invite a lot of people and a lot of people would say that they were out of town, they couldn't make it. A lot of people wouldn't respond at all. I would be like, okay, I need to follow up, but I don't want to be annoying. I would follow up like 3 times, no one would respond. And then a week before the party, I would always be like, I think I got to cancel this because no one's coming. And this is really humiliating and I don't think I have any friends. And if I continue with this party, what's going to happen is people are going to show up, see that no one else is there, and they'll be like, this girl's a loser. I don't want to go to her parties again. And then I'm going to have an even smaller group of people next time. And I'm just going to circle the drain time and time again.
How many, when you send out an invitation, like how many people are you inviting typically?
It's gotten smaller. So it used to be that I would invite a lot of my coworkers and I would invite a lot of people that I've met once or twice. And I would set this really, really wide net, 30, 40 people, and like maybe 8 people would show up. So now I'll invite like 10 couples, 10 families, and I'm lucky if 3 show up.
That is a low yield. I have to say, like, that is a low yield.
It's a very low yield. One thing, though, is I have to avoid holiday weekends because I'm from an area where apparently no one stays home for any holiday weekend ever. Like, everyone's always out of town. And that's the most common response I get is, I'm out of town. So I have to be very careful.
And you take I'm out of town, like when you get that as a common response, you're both thinking a lot of people are traveling a lot and some people might be using it as a very like convenient social out.
Oh, completely. I see it as like every individual person who says it in the moment, I believe them. And I'm like, okay, sure. But then I look at my invite list and I'm like, okay, I invited 10 people, 7 are out of town on a random weekend in October. What are the odds, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like some of them are lying. I don't know who it is. What I sometimes do is I calculate, oh, this person has been out of town every single time I've invited them. I don't believe. There was one woman that claimed to have a stomach virus 3 times in a row. She didn't even change the virus. She couldn't even have the decency to get COVID or something. I was like, I don't believe you.
Some important context. When Claire moved to the place where she currently lives, she was hoping to make a ton of new friends there. Instead, COVID struck, and she and her husband had a baby, then another. And the triple whammy, new home, pandemic, kids, has just made finding people harder than she would have liked. She's got some mom friends from the park, one through a Facebook group, a few wins. But there's something about the conversion from a good first meeting to friendship that is malfunctioning. Claire's not a closer.
Like, here's a great example.
Yeah.
I met this woman. She came over to our house with her kids. We had a really nice time. And she was like, I definitely want to hang out with you again. This was so fun. We have so much in common. And we did have so much in common. And then I invited them to my son's birthday party. And I met her husband at this party. And I said to him, like, oh, I've gotten really close with your wife. She seems so nice. We have so much in common. I don't know if you've gotten to meet my husband at all, but like, it would be great. We could all go out, do something together, even with the kids, if you wanted to bring them. And he very coldly said, well, we have a lot going on this summer. Like, we're going to be out of town a lot. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's fine. We are too, actually. But like, when we get back, let's all work something out. And he was like, well, you know, work is pretty crazy. And like, I have a lot going on. And I was like, why does this guy not want, like, he was clearly making excuses. And I was like stupidly taking them at face value. Like I was like shooting down every objection. I was like, oh yeah, don't worry about it. Like we can come to you. Like, blah, blah. And then I was like, no, no, no. It's deliberate. He doesn't want to hang out with me.
I don't know why. Like, maybe it was because I was talking to the husband and not the wife. Like, maybe he thought I was hitting on him. Like, I was like, I don't know. But he did not want to hang out with me. And then I never heard from the wife again. And to this day, I still have no idea what it was. It could have been, like, my kid, or it could have been me, or it could have been my husband. Like, I don't know. It could have been anything. But I've had so many interactions like that, that after a while, I'm like, something's going on.
And how much do you worry that it is just, like something about you? Like, how much does your brain say, like, this is a personal thing?
Oh, it always comes back to that. I think that's a likely culprit. Some of my earliest memories from preschool, even, because I have a pretty good memory, is like, something is wrong with me. I don't know what it is. Other people are in on this code. I'm not in on it. I don't get it. A lot of people have speculated that I have autism. I've been tested a lot of times, and I don't. I'm not even like remotely on the spectrum. So I don't know what it is.
Talking to Claire, reading Claire, it's very obvious you are encountering an unusual person. Not autistic, but has been tested a lot of times, sort of its own category. She's also been diagnosed with OCD, ADHD. She's a person with a brain that works really well in some ways, less well in others, where the part that sees clearly is constantly trying to describe things to the part that sees fuzzily. You say, like, you have early, early memories of this feeling of, like, whatever, the social rhythm that some people find easily, you only found with difficulty.
I was the kid not invited to other kids' birthday parties, and then no one would ever come to mine. So this is a deep wound from, like, childhood. And I have a summer birthday, so I'm going to blame some of it on, like, people actually traveling. But there was a little girl. I still remember her name. It was Megan. If you're listening now, Megan, yes, I am still angry at you. But she had a birthday party. We were six, and she invited the whole class except for me. And I don't know what kind of mother, now as a mother looking back on that, I'm like, what sicko would allow their kid to invite their whole first grade class except this 1 6-year-old girl? Like, what a horrible person. So, I mean, not her fault because she was a child, but, like, her mother needs to answer for her crimes. And at that age, your parents tell you that you're perfect and amazing. I mean, if you have loving parents, and my parents always told me, oh, you're so likable. I love you so much. You're so funny. You're so kind. And so there's this thing where I'm like, well, why doesn't anyone else like me?
I think it's fair to say that some version of this question exists in most people's minds, at least sometimes. Who among us has not had the feeling that they're being off-putting but don't know why? That their personality has a big green chunk of something in its teeth that everybody else is reacting to but won't just describe for you? Well, nobody will do it except a podcaster. That's why we're devoting a full episode to documenting one person's potential flaws and faux pas, an unusually thick-skinned extrovert who has invited us explicitly to do so. Claire assured me she was prepared to sit with whatever it was we found.
I think I'm at the point in life where, like, I'm a big girl, I can handle it. What I want this to be, not that it's up to me, but, like, I just want it to be funny and relatable and, like, oh, you know, she's a little awkward. Like, I think that's fine. I'm okay to be roasted a little bit. I'm okay if someone says her parties fucking suck ass and I've hated every single one, I will laugh at that. But if someone's like, she's a horrible mother and I suspect that she is a serial killer, I will be very upset. So
totally, totally understandable. Like, you are, this is like a very, like, human set of concerns.
And so would the next step be for me to send you some people that you should talk to?
Yes, that would be the best thing.
Okay, I will do that.
Awesome. All right, thank you.
All right.
Talk to you soon. After the break, we go get answers. We'll be right back. This episode of Search Engine is brought to you in part by LinkedIn Talent Solutions. Running a small business means every hire matters. A bad hire can cost you time, money, and momentum. A good hire, they can help grow your business. But finding great talent isn't easy, especially when you don't have the time or resources to sift through piles of resumes to find the right fit. That's why LinkedIn built Hiring Pro, your new hiring partner that screens candidates for you. So instead of sorting through applications, you spend your time talking to candidates who are actually good. Making a good hire is always important. It's especially important if you have a very small business, like Search Engine. With Hiring Pro, you can hire with confidence, knowing you're getting the best talent for your business. In fact, those hiring with LinkedIn are 24% less likely to need to reopen a role within 12 months compared to the leading competitor. Join the 2.7 million small businesses using LinkedIn to hire. Get started by posting your job for free at linkedin.com/pjsearch. Terms and conditions apply. This episode of Search Engine is brought to you in part by Built. We can all agree that housing is expensive. Rent, mortgage, doesn't really matter which one you're paying. It stings every month. Built can make it feel a little better. Built started out rewarding members on their rent. Now, as of 2026, Built members can also earn points on mortgage payments wherever they live. Every housing payment earns you points you can use towards flights with top travel partners like United and Hyatt, Lyft rides, Amazon.com purchases, and much more. But here's the most underrated part. Built members also get access to a neighborhood concierge. It can make restaurant reservations, book fitness classes, and find new local spots, all while being rewarded at more than 45,000 merchant partners. It's like having a personal assistant baked into where you live. It's simple. Being a renter and now owning a home is better with Built. Join the membership for where you live at joinbuilt.com/search. That's joinbilt.com/search. Make sure to use our URL so they know we sent you. This episode of Search Engine is brought to you in part by Proton VPN. You know that creepy feeling when you mention a specific pair of vintage boots once and suddenly your entire social media feed is just boots? It's like the internet is reading over your shoulder, which is why you should try Proton VPN, especially when you're working from a coffee shop and don't want the guy at the next table snooping on your data. Plus, we've all hit that annoying content not available in your region wall while trying to watch a show on the road. With Proton VPN, you, or honestly me, can just swap your virtual location and you or I am back in business. It's a secure service built for people who actually care about digital privacy. Proton is backed by Swiss privacy laws and has a strictly verified no logs policy. It's even open source, so they aren't hiding anything behind the scenes. Right now, Proton VPN is offering our listeners 70% off a 2-year plan when you go to protonvpn.com/search. That's protonvpn.com/search for 70% off your 2-year plan. That's protonvpn.com/search. Welcome back to the show. Like everybody else, I like things that are good. A good meal, a good movie. But I can get about as much pleasure out of something that just totally sucks. An AI-written song someone's generated that they are now playing for me off their phone speaker, convinced it's completely brilliant. If something is bad enough, trying to just explain to myself what makes it bad is its own pleasure. Autopsy of a stank. How many times in my life, driving home from an open mic night or a play, had I already been mentally running through a kind of true crime story? Who or what killed the fun that could have existed in this place? I'd done it actually for about a million parties I'd attended. I'd just never done it like this, over the phone, for a series of parties I hadn't. Claire had sent me a long list of people who'd agreed to talk. Intimates like her husband and brother, old friends from her pre-mom life in San Francisco, also new people in her new home. I decided to start there. How long have you known Claire?
Okay, so I've known Claire about 5 years. We met as a mom meetup during the pandemic.
This is Liz, a friend who Claire met through an event organized on the local Facebook moms group.
There was a third mom that was there, and she was kind of boring, but I could tell Claire was interesting and funny and, like, neurotic and witty. And I'm like, I shall become her friend.
And so have you been to any of Claire and Nick's parties?
So we have kids. So my only experience with her parties has been kids' birthday parties.
And what are they like?
So like basically they have a like great backyard space. They're a shoe-free household. So you take off your shoes, but then you put them back on to go through the back. Or your kids have wet feet in their socks, which also happens to my kids on occasion. But I'm like kind of a laissez-faire parent, so I don't care as much about that.
Yeah.
But you get to the back. Normally her husband has like a cocktail situation going on, which is sometimes non-alcoholic, sometimes alcohol, depending on where they are in their alcohol journey. And then there's normally like a kid's beverage of some sort that's on the healthier side. And then there's like a birthday cake of some sort. The last time she made like a really beautiful cake herself, it was delicious.
Clues. Already, scattered clues. Dots in search of a line. Alcohol journey. I filed that in my head in case it meant something. But also, actually, the delicious cake. It meant the food probably wasn't the problem, unless I wondered if Claire could be overstudying people's reactions to her cooking. A party failure mode I've both encountered and definitely created. Liz continued.
And then, like, normally the kids are just hanging out for a while. They play on the swing set. They mess around. At, like, two parties ago, she gave away these really beautiful hand-crocheted stuffed animals because she didn't like the waste of, like, a lot of goodie bags. And they were, like, very precious and sweet. So very thoughtful, very nice. But, yeah, like, it's a kid's birthday party.
I mean, it sounds nice, though. It doesn't sound...
It is.
And it's not super structured.
No, it's super chill. Like... especially given that it's Claire and Nick, it is significantly more chill than other things in their lives.
And what do you mean by way more chill than some of the other things in their lives?
You know, like the tidiness of the house is really important to Nick. Claire gets distracted sometimes because she is really focused on her kids. And like she's a good mom. She really cares about her kids and like really tries to stay attuned to everything that's going on with them. Much more so than I do. We went out for sushi once and it was like an all-you-can-eat sushi place and the kids were playing on a field and like she spent like a significant amount of our time like trying to make sure she could always see her son and that he would come closer, whereas like my kids were just running around like crazy animals and I was just like, whatever. So yeah, stuff like that.
Stuff like that. I put that in my notebook. So... it's funny. It's like you're describing people who are like anxious, maybe like verging on uptight, which is totally fine. But you're not having what confuses me is like the experience she's having is like there's something about the party she's throwing or the way she's throwing them or something that is putting off some people. There are people who go and never come back or people who see the invitation and decide not to come. But it's hard because what you're describing sounds very normal and fine.
It's super normal.
And you've never been, I'm trying to resist my own temptation to lead the witness, but you've never been at a party of Claire's where you've thought, this party's kind of weird. It should be different.
No, never like it was weird. Like it's always a small gathering, but it's always pleasant.
Huh. Okay.
I'd say like maybe if there was more food, like that would be my one piece of feedback, like more food would be great.
Is it not many snacks?
There aren't that many snacks, but I would never say that was like a turnoff to the party.
People appreciate charcuterie, crudité, tiny pigs, and tiny blankets. You might even show up for good enough snacks, but their scarcity wasn't a reason for a 70% decline rate. I made my next call. How far back do you go with Claire?
So we met the summer of 2023. I want to say. So it's been a few years.
This is Meredith, another fellow mom, but less a friend, more an acquaintance. Meredith had had some different experiences at Claire's parties, although not at the first one. The first one was fine.
It was lovely. They invited maybe the entire class of families, like not just kids, but whole families to their place for a get-together. It was like a beautiful late May or June day. They have this wonderful backyard where they had like a swing set and they had a bouncy castle water feature type thing set up. And
oh, wow. Had they rented the bouncy castle or did they have a full-time?
Oh, no, they owned it. Yes, they owned it.
I've never been to anyone's house who owned a bouncy castle.
I know. Yeah.
The bouncy castle. There'd been this kid I'd known in junior high. I remember being somewhat ostracized not because anything was wrong with him, except how badly he was trying to be liked. The decadence and opulence of his seventh grade birthday party. He would have had a bouncy castle. Could the problem here just be the visible sweatiness of it all? But I looked into it. This bouncy castle was actually modest, one you can get on Amazon for about $150. And besides, the bouncy castle had charmed Meredith.
I was like, wow, okay. The kids were like thrilled, you know. If I had been hosting the party, I would have been like, that was a great success.
Have you ever been to a party at their house that felt unusual or awkward or weird or not fun?
So the third party, and the final party that I was invited to at their house was different. It was a joint party for Claire and her daughter. It was more indoor, and it was a totally different vibe. She had invited, there were some family there, there were coworkers there, there were some of her husband's friends were there, and a tiny smattering of the same preschool parent group was there.
And were they not mushing in a coherent way?
No. No. I mean, because the coworkers kind of stuck together, and then like the ones of us that had kids, like we were in and out of their basement because that's where like the kids were mostly hanging out.
And they weren't able to reach across the gap because sometimes it's fine. Like sometimes it's fine. Sometimes people mix, but they were not mixing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I don't think they were mixing that well. I don't think I was mixing that well either. And Claire was being pulled in a bunch of different directions herself.
What do you mean? Can you describe what that was like?
She and her daughter had these very cute matching outfits. They were trying to get photos. She was trying to, like, get drinks and stuff. I don't know. She was, like, hosting in very normal, expected ways. But I don't remember feeling like she was sort of doing the connecting work.
She wasn't doing the, like, oh, you should talk to this person, and you guys need to talk about Pittsburgh, because you guys both went to Pittsburgh one time.
Right.
Maybe one of the more common forms of bad party in this world. The one where you're an ingredient placed into a mix in which you're never going to belong. You're mustard, squirted into the batter of a cake.
It was one of those things where, you know, I didn't know how long to stay. It was a very open-ended party, and I definitely felt, like, relieved, you know? I don't know. That it was, like, coming to, like, to an end.
We're going to be here for the amount of time we need to be here, and when you go, you get in the car, and you're like, let's go home.
Yeah, we're like, okay, I did that. But it's like, so hard, because, like, I do really appreciate people who are willing to host, and I think it's amazing that she is. So it's, I feel, like, awful, honestly, being, like, negative about it in any way. It was just like, it did not feel like a party I wanted to stay at.
I filed these stories away and began to reach out to a new list of people, the San Franciscans, people who'd known Claire longer, even before she was mom. I sent my emails. I waited for responses. Why do parties matter? I hesitate to say this next bit because I believe it so earnestly, it makes me cringe. But I do think parties matter in a deep, serious way. Parties summon the thing we actually care about, community. Not community meaning fans of an influencer, not community meaning consumers of a product, actual community. When people who know each other a lot or a little come together to risk something, risk being embarrassed or embarrassing, bored or boring. Nobody has time for a party. We all work too much. It's shameful to care about them, certainly as much as I do, certainly as much as Claire does. But I think they reach us somewhere that's deeper than modern. 2 inches beneath the surface of our brain, we're cave people. Scared, alone, afraid that when we wake up, the tribe will have moved on, and we'll have to fend for ourselves against all these bears. Claire doesn't know what it is about her that drives people away. That woman she tried to befriend, the woman's husband, her group of friends in middle school, who one day, out of nowhere, just permanently voted her off the lunch table. You don't get to do exit interviews with the people who decline your friendship. But a party, it's a way, at least, to test her current phone book, to see if the people whose numbers she knows will actually show up if she calls them. That's why she'd asked about the parties. That's why I was here.
So my name is Alyssa, and I've known Claire, I don't know how many years, since she very first moved to San Francisco. So maybe 14 or 15 years ago.
Alyssa's a long-distance friend today, but back in SF, she and Claire were extremely close, which means she attended many of Claire and her husband Nick's parties, and what she had to tell me was informative. For starters, even way back then, these were low-yield parties.
I would say a handful of people would show up, often the same characters, often random characters who are like people she was trying to like befriend that week. I don't have a problem with these like smaller group gatherings, but I think in her mind, she always wanted more of a rager. So I guess she interpreted them as being, you know, disappointments, but as an attendee, I never did.
So more evidence that Claire kind of just hodgepodges people together. Some people mind, others don't. But Alyssa, helpfully, had also done a little reporting of her own.
I asked my own husband for his perspective. I was like, do you remember those parties? And he's like, well, I remember that their place was really small and we would just sort of all be crowded around a TV watching music videos.
Wait, really?
Yeah. She wanted this like upscale martini drinking vibe in her apartment. But then when you get there, it was definitely like an apartment that was very decorated by Nick. Kind of like looked like a guy's place. It's not as polished compared to where they live now.
Help me see it. Like, how did Nick decorate an apartment back then?
It was dark. Dark. There was sports paraphernalia like on the walls. There was a license plate that said Ass Man on it on the wall, which I always loved. And that's what my husband brought up to. He's like, Ass Man. I'm like, yeah, I know. That was so good. We have so many photos of it.
The Ass Man license plate, of course, a Seinfeld reference, Kramer's license plate in one episode. And under the Ass Man plate, they would participate in some strange party rituals, led by Claire's husband.
So we'd get to his apartment and the TV was always on, and he always wanted to show, like, music videos.
Music videos? Like, do you remember the genre?
I'm going to mispronounce it, but David Guetta, he really liked him.
The, like, dance music. Like, I think
dance
David
music.
Guetta's EDM?
I never watch music videos. Outside of their apartment, I don't think I would ever intentionally look up a music video, but it's very core to like the party scene there. The second genre of events that would happen at these parties would be Claire's impressions. Where she would like, I think she did like an Iggy Azalea one. She's always been into doing impressions. Nick would sort of like, you know, get everyone quiet and be like, hold on, hold on. Like, Claire's going to do an impression now. It was a little forced, maybe. And, you know, he was always her biggest cheerleader, like laughing it up and thinking it was so great. But I think it was never my husband's sense of humor or something like he was entertained by. Like, she is not everyone's cup of tea. And her sense of humor is absolutely not everyone's flavor.
Listening to this, I got the feeling I imagine defense attorneys get when they learn something about their client that might not play so well in court. An upscale martini drinking party in a man cave where the hosts go kind of Michael Scott on you, the husband demanding you sit quietly and be an audience for his wife's humorous impressions, while meanwhile, you're also subject to unsolicited David Guetta tracks on YouTube. This did not sound like my idea of a good party at all. I don't like David Guetta. I would remember that party, but I don't think I would come back for another. What kind of monster would do this to people?
My name is Nick. I'm her husband. We've been together since she was 19, so 17 years. We've been married almost 12 years. Yeah, we've been together. So I know her pretty well if you have any questions.
Nick, not his real name. As Alyssa had alleged, Nick was responsible for those David Guetta tracks. And by his admission, he'd also been egging Claire on when it came to her comedic impersonations.
She was an incredible impersonator. Like, she can like sing and just do like all these different artists. So I like hijacked the party and like make her do like a show for people because she's so, everyone would be laughing and laughing. And it's like, but I always think like if she put like her talents more in display, I always say that you get more friends that way. That was always my philosophy. And she always goes like the complete opposite, like not wanting to like be the center of attention anymore, never wanting to like talk about her work or anything like that.
It's hard not to appreciate Nick's profound love for his wife, his conviction that she's the funniest person he knows, his desire to show her off. It was sweet. I was even willing to give him a pass on the David Guetta stuff. And so the problem that she's identifying, that the invitation yield is bad, is this a problem that you also perceive to be real?
It's definitely a problem. Yes. Yes. It is. It's been a problem. So we lived in San Francisco for a while. And back then, we never had big turnouts, but we always had a good group of people. And since we moved, we've just never had consistent turnouts. And she really likes throwing parties. She grew up and, you know, her family always threw parties, like these big extravagant parties. So she's always trying to do this. It just never comes to fruition.
And what do you suspect is going on?
Well, I think there's probably like a pie of a lot of different reasons. I'm sure I'm part of the problem. Like, I also have OCD. I can definitely get like hyper fixated with people like, you know, scratching a table or leaving a glass of water on a table without a coaster. So that's a little piece of the pie. I think like she can definitely get very anxious when her kids aren't in sight. And I think like at a party, that probably can make people feel a little bit uncomfortable. Or like, I mean, the other thing, she, you know, a lot of the moms typically will like wear like, even to like a party, would wear like maybe just like nice sweatpants. I mean, not like, not dressed, not very dressed, but she comes like fully dressed up, right? I think that could also make people feel a little bit uncomfortable.
The thing about the clothes, I'd actually wondered about this too. One recurring theme on Claire's Substack, on Cartoons Hate Her, is the outfits she wears. She often makes her own clothes. She posts photos with her face blocked out. Internet commenters have remarked on her fashion. Someone called her clothes indecent, immodest. They're being prudes, but anyone who dresses remarkably risks annoying some people. Nick and Claire had both noted that sometimes women in particular react badly to Claire, like the women at the office where she used to work.
People she worked with, like the cool girls from work that would come, and they would be like very mean to her.
They'd be mean at the party?
They would just not like pay attention to her or really engage with her. I remember like we were getting the party ready and we were on the roof deck and we saw someone like waiting at the bottom. They had a huge bottle of rosé. I was like, you can come in. It was like starting to rain. Like, you can come in. They're like, no, I don't want to come in until the other girls are here.
Oh my God.
So she was like waiting outside with the bottle. She didn't want to be just like in there with Claire until all the other girls from work that she was friends with were there too.
That's just really painful.
Yeah, she's had a lot of really painful experiences. I tell her to just stop. I just like do not care that much. Like, I just don't see why it's the effort or the stress. It puts you through so much stress. I don't get why she keeps doing this to herself.
Nick would prefer to not see his wife get hurt like this over and over again. He wishes they could just stick to dinner with friends. The big parties aren't even fun. Nick's brain doesn't have the feature Claire's does. A deep curiosity to know why some people don't like him, which is a sane position. Because all of us are annoying and boring some of the time, in ways we'll never detect. How many times have I been at a party telling what I think is a hilarious anecdote when I notice that the person I've been talking at, their phone has the Uber screen on it? Because while I was enjoying how funny I think I am, they were summoning an escape pod. It's just a fact of being a person. And unless you're a politician or a celebrity, the world will never tell you the specifics of your unfavorables. But for Claire, the unfavorables were impossible to ignore because her whole life, she found herself bumping into them. Months had passed now. I'd mostly worked through the list Claire had sent. Everybody had grasped a part of the elephant. It wasn't even that mysterious. For one, Claire's very anxious. It's not uncommon for her to have a freak out because she's convinced something terrible has happened to her husband or her kids. Another part of the elephant is Claire's sense of humor. A distinct flavor, not for everyone. Big performer. The kind of person who once so thoroughly hijacked a party with her Lana Del Rey impression that no one could hear anything else. A ham like that is never going to be for everyone. Although Claire says she's purposely, over the years, taught herself to dial that down, to spend less time trying to be funny, more time trying to just ask people questions about themselves. But still, the RSVPs were coming back no's, and at such a higher rate than any of this would have predicted. The last person I talked to probably should have been the first. A person who could see every part of the elephant. Claire's brother. He knew he'd always known why nobody goes to his sister's parties. It was like he'd been waiting for my call. I guess, first of all, is your perception that this is a real thing? Like, do you feel like people don't go to your sister's parties?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so like, my sister and I are like really, really, really best friends. And by the way, this is not background. Like, you could print this. Like, she's just like a very difficult and annoying person, but like, she's my absolute best friend. So like, for example, today she's like texted me like over 100 times about hantavirus and like whether she's gonna like die from hantavirus.
When you say over 100 times, are you speaking rhetorically or?
No. I think that the number of texts about hantavirus are probably about close to 100, and they were probably over 100 yesterday.
Oh, that's a lot.
And like, that's like, I ignore her like when I don't want to like respond to it, but she's like a genius and genuinely one of the most originally funny and like amazing people ever. But like, she does a lot of things that would make her being like a really popular party host difficult.
Claire's brother would paint me a picture of Claire at a party that was clearer than anyone before had. But before he did that, he needed me to see what I'd been missing in Claire's story, the skeleton key to all of this.
So like, she's like never been popular like at all. Like, she's always been like quite widely disliked because she has a very polarizing set of traits. For one, she has a very narrow series of interests, and the people who do have those interests are almost never women. So like, groups of women like usually like hate her because she's constantly violating conformity and like being different in a way that's very unsettling and uncomfortable.
And what is she trying to engage them in conversation? When you say she has a narrow set of interests.
For example, like, she's really into like social taboo conceptually, which is very funny because she doesn't have very good social skills, but she's very interested in other people's bad, like, so like anything that's like cringe, like she really loves cringe.
Oh, okay.
And so like, she has like kind of the sense of humor and the disposition of like a Mountain Dew drinking Redditor, like Reddit bro. But like, obviously, like if you talk to her, like she doesn't give off that impression right away. She's like,
no, she looks like a very normal person.
Yeah. So like, people like see her and they think like, oh, like I know this kind of like woman. And then they like talk to her. And if she's like being completely authentic, they're like very immediately bothered by her. And she like has never known why.
Because I just want to make sure I have a clear picture of this. It's like, she looks like a person who like maybe like
normal girl.
Yeah. Wants to talk about how great The Office was or something, or like Parks and Rec.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then instead, like, not it's like all. She's reading really off-putting, like she wants to spend her time online looking at like weird subcultures that are behaving in terrible ways and talk about it with you.
So she was like really into, not into as in being a supporter of, but like really into in terms of like being a lurker of like red pill and incel blogs, like years before that was like a thing. Like in like 2013, she was like reading like red pill blogs.
Cause she's just like, what are these sickos thinking?
Yeah. She was really into it.
To his mind, terminally online cringe merchant is the realest version of his sister, what she actually cares about, what she can actually connect with other people over in a real way. He thinks the solution to all this is clear. Claire should stop trying to fit in with normal people. She's not normal. Find a scene of weirdos where she can be herself. But what he's seen instead is a person who's taken the wrong lesson from being shunned so much, who now just keeps trying harder and harder to fit in, particularly after leaving San Francisco.
When she moved, she was like, okay, this time is going to be different. So now what she does is she like performs the role a lot. So in short, I don't think her parties are well attended because I don't think they're fun. I've been to them. I don't think they're fun. And the reason why I don't think they're fun is that she's like pretending to be someone who throws like well-liked normie parties.
Yeah.
For the normal person, it's a kind of like off-putting, bizarre performance. And to me, it's like a hilariously inadequate performance.
I want to put VR goggles over my eyes right now. I've walked into one of her parties.
Yes.
What happened?
So like at these kinds of parties, I feel like I'm going to a movie with my favorite comedic actor, but it's a drama and their performance is bad and boring. And so it's like she is performing her idea of what a mom should be and what a woman in her 30s should be. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's just very boring. because the thing about it is that she doesn't have that many things to talk about. She has a couple of things to talk about endlessly, but those are not appropriate topics usually. So it's like, if I meet someone who's a civil engineer designing bridges, I like pretend to care about bridges for 20 minutes and like try to learn as much as I can about like bridges.
Yeah.
And then her eyes just like glaze over, not because she's mean, but because something in her brain like does not fire properly.
Yeah.
And she just like can't care. So she'll be like, oh, how is that? And they'll be like, it's pretty good. And she'll be like, okay, like, do you work in office? She really hates working in office because she's just like always bullied when she's in office. Like her main way of relating to other people's jobs is like, do you have to be in an office? Because like, so they're like, yep, you know, I have to be in office. And she's like, oh, sorry about that, you know.
Claire's brother sees his sister as a closeted person who isn't really passing, except not in a tragic way, in a slapstick way. Like if Bigfoot put on a suit and tried to ride the subway unnoticed. He thinks for Claire to have an actually fun party, she'd have to fill it with the kinds of people who appreciate her as her, instead of these normies who are not quite falling for her regular person impression.
When I host house parties, which are well attended, by the way, I talk about her all the time, but like all just the freak flag stuff, like all the like zany stuff that she does. And like the people who are my friends who like don't know her are all like, this sounds like the coolest, funniest person ever. But she like is so scarred from being bullied for being that person that she just can't do it anymore. So she came to visit me and I literally organized on Partyful a like Claire meet and greet to have all my friends come meet her in person.
Mm.
And she was being so boring. And I took her aside and I was like, what are you doing? And she's like, I'm just like, I'm being like polite with your friends. And I was like, no. Like, that's not what they're here for. Do your thing. Like, do whatever you want. Like, that's what they want. And she was like, oh, are you sure? Like, isn't that going to be like rude? And I was like, no. Like, you're allowed to. And then 5 minutes later, she's like doing her like whole song and dance. Like, people are loving it.
Huh.
And this is like why... Rather than asking, like, why don't people come to her parties, like, the more interesting thing is, like, why do people on the internet like her?
This is what I've been thinking about the whole time you've been talking. Yeah.
The story of me knowing her is that no one likes her. And then, like, suddenly now everyone likes her.
Online,
but not in person.
It's funny. The internet is a party, sort of, kind of, that she's throwing mm-hmm. in her Substack. And she's, like...
People love it.
Top of the leaderboard.
People love it. Yes.
I called Claire to tell her everything I'd learned. She laughed. She laughed a lot as I listed off everything people had said they thought might be off-putting about her. For every negative trait, she had a story, often a funny one, about times when she'd exhibited it. But when it came to her brother's advice to remove her mask, find rooms where she could do that easily, stop trying to fit in normie town, she rejected that.
I think my brother's off base there because I think he's viewing it through his eyes where he thinks who I am is great. But I have to break it to him, like, most people don't like who I am. Most people find me really insufferable when I am filterless and talk a lot and perform constantly and am very focused on myself. Most people find that very tiring.
The lesson she's learned over the years is more like, be yourself, but carefully, not all at once. And she had an update for me. She's still not throwing successful parties, but she said something seems to be shifting. Her social calendar feels less anemic. She said just that week, on 3 separate occasions, it was her making the excuses for why she couldn't find time.
My kid got a cold and I had to be the person that, oh, my kid got sick, like I can't. And it was true, like I wasn't making it up. But it's like, I never thought I would be the person canceling. Like I used to be the person where it's like, unless it was a medical emergency, I will do anything to get someone to hang out with me because I just have so few opportunities. And this week I was like, you know what? I actually can postpone things. Which did give me some insight into why people sometimes cancel on me. Like maybe it isn't always me. Like maybe they actually are busy and people are just busier than I am.
And this new social success Claire is having, she attributes it to the strategy she's followed, toning down the louder parts of her personality.
I can't be that person with people I'm just meeting. I can't go up to a mom at the park and be like, want to hear my Trump impression. Like 1% chance she wants to hear it, you know? So that's just, you know, how it is. And so even though it is a little phony, it's a temporary stage where eventually I do slowly sort of drop the mask and like people get to know me and, you know, I get them nice and comfortable. And then I'm like, oh, I'm doing Trump impressions.
Actually, this one couple had us over for dinner, and I did the Trump impression, and we have not heard from them since. So, listening and learning. They say that they are very busy with travel sports, which I'm told is a real thing, so I don't want to discount it. But the travel sports appeared to have begun after your favorite president maybe. So it is.
Claire Haber-Harris. If you'd like to come to the party she throws every week on the internet, you can find her at Cartoons Hate Her. I say this with all admiration. It's a super weird hang. Not for everyone. This episode of Search Engine is brought to you in part by Square, the easy way for business owners to take payments, book appointments, and keep everything running in one place. Whether you're selling lattes, cutting hair, or running a design studio, Square helps you run your business without running yourself into the ground. My current favorite small business that uses Square, which I want everyone to go visit and say that Search Engine sent them, is Enoki. It's in Socrates, New York. It's an Asian pantry and vintage clothing store. Both the clothes and the kimchi are fantastic, and they use Square at the register. What I've noticed is that the hardware looks polished and the software is incredibly straightforward, so businesses can set it up and start taking payments quickly. With Square, you get all the tools to run your business with none of the contracts or complexity. And why wait? Right now, you can get up to $200 off Square hardware at square.com/go/engine. That's SQUARE.com/GO/engine. Run your business smarter with Square. Get started today. This episode of Search Engine is brought to you in part by NPR's Planet Money. Whether you're an expert or just curious, Planet Money from NPR is the show that makes sense of the economy through stories you'll actually want to hear. I still remember their classic Planet Money Makes a T-Shirt series where they tracked the global supply chain from a cotton farm in Mississippi to a factory in Bangladesh. It turned a massive abstract concept like globalization into something human and tangible. That's their superpower, making the complex feel simple. Their hosts go to unusual lengths to explain the world to you. They have published their own book, shot a satellite into space to understand the private space industry. They even went inside a live book auction to show how ideas get to market. It's the kind of show where you learn something, probably laugh, and walk away seeing the world a little differently. It's a space where the complex economy somehow makes sense and the dismal science becomes anything but. Follow NPR's Planet Money podcast and understand how money shapes the world. This episode of Search Engine is brought to you in part by Mint Mobile. A lot of people wonder what the catch is with Mint Mobile's $15 a month plans. There isn't one. You really do get unlimited talk, text, and data on the nation's largest 5G network, plus an award-winning care team. You will absolutely love not being locked into a bloated monthly contract anymore. Mint Mobile took what's wrong with the wireless industry and made it right by offering premium wireless for just $15 a month. It's incredibly easy to switch. You can keep your current phone and number, choose from a 3, 6, or 12-month plan, and stop stressing over a monthly bill. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/search. That's mintmobile.com/search. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/search. That's it. There's no catch. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. Search Engine is a presentation of Odyssey. It was created by me, PJ Vogt, and Shruti Pinnamaneni. Garrett Graham is our senior producer. Emily Maltaire is our associate producer. Our production intern is Piper Dumont. Theme, original composition, and mixing by Armin Bazarian. Fact-checking this week by Natsumi Ajisaka. Our executive producer is Leah Reese Dennis. Thanks to the rest of the team at Odyssey. Rob Morandi, Craig Cox, Eric Donnelly, Colin Gaynor, Maura Curran, Josephina Francis, Kurt Courtney, and Hillary Schaff. If you have a business and would like to advertise on Search Engine, please email us, pjvote85@gmail.com, subject line, advertising. You can also send your questions there if you have a question for the show. If you would like to not hear ads on the show, you can sign up for Incognito Mode, our paid feed. You also get bonus episodes. You can find that feed at searchengine.show. Your contributions there are what help us keep this whole thing running. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. This episode of Search Engine is brought to you in part by Atari Hotels. Quick stat for you. Phoenix tourism is up 23%, hotel occupancy is at 89%, and a developer called Intersection Development, who already has 15 properties live and operating on Roosevelt Row in downtown Phoenix, has purchased the land for what might be the most interesting hotel project in the country. It's the first ever Atari hotel. And before you write that off as a novelty concept, consider that the gaming industry just crossed $450 billion, bigger than film and music combined. This project sits at the crossover of that culture with one of the strongest hospitality markets in the US. Even more interesting is that they filed a Reg A Plus with the SEC, which means you can pull up the actual financials, projections, full deal structure, and become an investor. Check it out at atarihotels.com. That's atarihotels.com.